You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Now, the conversation there did turn to the Higgs boson. And, of course, the Nobel Prize in Physics this year was awarded to Higgs and Englert for the theoretical groundwork predicting the particle's existence. Earlier this year, a team of LHC physicists that led the hunt for the Higgs received an award of their own at the Glittering Fundamental Physics Prize ceremony in Geneva, Switzerland. Reporter Corinne Pickemer met with one of those who shared the $3 million prize, Tejinder Verdi at Imperial College London. He told her more about the discovery and his plans to use his share of the prize money to encourage interest in physics in Africa.
On the 4th of July 2012, physicists working at the ATLAS and CMS experiments at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Geneva found evidence for the famed but elusive Higgs boson particle. The existence of this particle was first hypothesized independently by a number of theoretical physicists, including Peter Higgs and François Englert, in 1964. And after the initial sighting in 2012, the Higgs boson particle was confirmed on March 14, 2013. Finding the Higgs boson more or less completes the standard model physicists have been using to describe the basic building blocks of the visible universe and explain the forces that work within them. So perhaps unsurprisingly, this year's Nobel Prize for Physics went to Higgs and Englert for their prediction of the existence of this particle. But the experimental physicists behind the discovery of the particle itself have not gone unrewarded either. In 2012, Russian entrepreneur and venture capitalist Yuri Milner, who studied theoretical physics at Moscow State University, established the Fundamental Physics Prize to help advance our knowledge of the universe and also to promote the communication of the excitement of fundamental physics to wide audiences. It is currently the most lucrative prize in science, and winners are free to spend it as they see fit. A number of physicists who have been central to the CMS and ATLAS experiments over the past two decades shared a special fundamental physics prize of $3 million. One of its recipients was Tejinder Verdi, professor of physics at Imperial College London. I visited Verdi in his office to find out to what use he is putting his share. But first I asked him about the theoretical work in 1964 that paved the way for the discovery of the Higgs boson.
Some 50 years ago, there were three papers published in quick succession. And the first one was by François Englert and Robert Brout. The second one was from Peter Higgs. And the third one was from Tom Kibble, Jerry Guralnik, and Carl Hagen. And in these papers, they were pretty mathematical in nature. What these guys had postulated was that there would be a field which permeates the whole universe. And this field is such that fundamental particles would interact with this field and acquire mass. Mass is a very fundamental quantity. For example, the first particle that was discovered of the so-called standard model was the electron. Last year we found the 17th particle of the Standard Model, a very successful theory. Now the electron has a mass, and the question is how does it get mass? Now if the electron did not have mass, it would travel at the speed of light. It would not be able to make atoms. There would be no structure. We would not be here talking. So this question actually goes to the heart of our existence. So from a mathematical idea, this momentous scientific endeavor was launched in a sense, but there were very many steps along the way. For many years, these papers were not really referred to. People didn't pay much attention to them. And that changed in 1967 through a paper by Tom Kibble, who's in this department. The electroweak theory came up, which is a theory which combines the interaction which we're very familiar with, electromagnetism, which is all around us, and something else which is called weak interaction, which is responsible for radioactivity and responsible for the burning of the sun. And these guys actually are the same things. And that actually launched this quest in trying to understand how the visible universe works. That unification led to some predictions. In fact, one of the predictions was a new particle called the Z boson. and that was found in CERN in 1983. When that happened, essentially many of the particles of the Standard Model had been discovered, but one key particle was missing, which was the Higgs boson, which actually is the keystone of the Standard Model. Soon after that time, people like me started thinking about doing an experiments, and the LHC project was born, in a sense. Now, that was a project which was extremely ambitious because we were going into territory that we had not gone into as experimentalists. The detectors that we needed to do the physics at the Large Hadron Collider, some of them didn't exist, so we had to invent them. And so that was an endeavor of about 20 years. And the CMS experiment, the LHC, and the ATLAS experiment are the most complex scientific instruments ever built. And last year, ATLAS and CMS found a Higgs boson. And so in that sense, you can see this endeavor, which is launched by some theoretical papers 50 years ago, yielded a result last year.
So why is this particle so difficult to find?
One, its mass was not known. Its mass was rather high. So we found it at a mass of about 125 times the mass of the proton. So that's one thing. So you have to produce it first. So the previous generation of colliders either couldn't produce it or didn't produce it in sufficient quantities to be able to see it. Not only is it difficult to produce, it's also difficult to detect it because once it's produced, it decays immediately into many different ways. And one of the ways in which we found it was that it decays into two high-energy light particles, two high-energy photons. And that happens in two parts in 1,000. So not only is it difficult to produce, in that particular signature, it doesn't happen very often either. So you have to produce a very large number of these particles, and essentially only the LHC was able to do that.
So what does the actual physical discovery of this particle mean in terms of our understanding of the universe?
I think it completes the Standard Model. So it actually describes extremely well the visible universe. Now I say visible very carefully because we know there is dark matter out there, and we also know there is dark energy. And these constitute 95% of the energy matter density of the universe. So we know a lot about 5%, but we don't know much about the other 95%. So for those 5%, it's a very successful theory. In a sense, it closes a chapter of our understanding of the visible universe, but the story is not obviously finished.
So it is very well deserved that those people who came up with those ideas 50 years ago got the Nobel Prize for it.
This is worthy of a Nobel Prize, yes.
While the award of the Nobel Prize received most mainstream coverage, Verdi's contribution, along with six other scientists involved in the ATLAS and CMS experiments, resulted in them being awarded the Fundamental Physics Prize. Verdi is now using the money from his award to try to inspire a whole new generation of potential physicists.
In a sense, it is a personal prize, but we couldn't have found the Higgs boson without the efforts of a very large number of people. For example, CMS has about 3,000 scientists and engineers from 40 countries. And so the thought was, can I do something in science education internationally that will make a significant impact? As I mentioned, CMS is a very international experiment. But one area was missing. We don't have any members from sub-Saharan Africa. I was born in Kenya. I was raised there, I went to school there, primary education, most of my secondary education was done in Kenya. And then I came over to the UK to do my O-levels and A-levels, and then the university education. And that opened the doors to do research. So I've had tremendous opportunities. So to think about somebody going to school on the shores of Lake Victoria and working on the most complex scientific instrument ever built, and having had a major part in doing it, meant that, you know, I really ought to see if the opportunities can also be afforded to the places where I came from. I believe the impact can be most significant in secondary education, where you have to capture the imaginations of the young into doing science or engineering or whatever. If you have a scientific literate population, then you can make progress economically much more rapidly than without. And so I thought, well, maybe secondary education is where one can make a difference. And it wouldn't cost that much, and you can actually reach a large number of people. And then I learned that there was a program from the Institute of Physics in the UK, which was actually further training physics teachers in eastern Uganda. And they've trained about 500 teachers in the last few years. And CERN has a teachers program, CERN teachers program, where they bring teachers from many, many different countries to spend a few weeks. And people at CERN give them lectures and they can look at the experiments. And so I got a couple of teachers from Uganda and Kenya to come over, and they really enjoyed it. One of the things that tends to be not available as much as it ought to be is the scientific equipment to do experiments, to capture the imagination. You know, you teach pupils something. If you can make that come alive by doing an experiment and proving to themselves that what they've been taught is indeed true, that sticks even more. And some of the equipment doesn't have to be, or quite a bit of the equipment doesn't have to be very complicated or costly, and can be locally produced. So this is another aspect of the program, to provide or make scientific equipment for doing experiments, and also pool the resources, and so other schools around the area can do this. So that kind of thing would be quite effective, and it will actually reach many, many thousands of pupils as such.
I guess once the prize money is spent, presumably you are building on the collaborations you've created with the IOP to keep the project going.
I think that's also an interesting issue, because in the end that goes into fundraising. And perhaps the fact that I'm associated with a very big scientific endeavor, which has been quite successful, and hopefully even more success in the future, we make more discoveries, that possibly opens doors. So I'll be exploring those kind of possibilities, yes.
So I know it's only early days, but have you got a sense as yet of how it's been received both at CERN and in Africa?
I think people at CERN were quite pleased, because they do wish to spread science education as one of their missions. And also another mission is to bring nations together through science. So in that sense, they are quite open to this, and so they were very pleased to have these teachers come over, and hopefully that will continue. I think the teachers themselves enjoyed it enormously. And through the programs like the IOP ones, I know that they do make an impact. So I think, you know, it is small scale, clearly, but, you know, I think they are effective, and maybe they can be made to larger scales if they're giving positive results.
Initiatives such as Verdi's can potentially make a real difference to the educational opportunities in countries like Kenya and Uganda. And it also fits in well with the spirit of the prize, which aims to spread knowledge about the workings of the natural world and the universe to as many people as possible. As for the future of the Large Hadron Collider, I ended the interview by asking Verdi what else he thinks is in store at CERN that will further our understanding of the universe in the next 10 years or so.
Conceiving these experiments and getting them built, we've just started exploiting them. Now, we hope to find physics beyond the Standard Model, which we all believe is there. Now, our belief is one thing, what nature has done is another. Because we were talking about this Nobel Prize. If he had not done the experiment, it would be obvious that that idea is correct. And so really the experiments have to tell us which way we have to go to make progress. One other aspect is that once you find a new particle like a Higgs boson, the next thing we do is to study it in great detail. In which context has nature placed it? What are its exact properties? And can one get clues as to what is beyond it by studying it in great detail? That in itself is a huge program of work of 10, 15 years. So I wouldn't be surprised if the LHC experiments are still going in 2030.
Thank you to Tejinder Verdi for chatting with Karin Bikamaran.